And now to dial it in just a little bit closer to home. Thanks to David Cerita for the first hour for talking with us about how the entire Earth is being affected by this. But let's dial it down a little bit to a slightly smaller area. That would be the Middle East and the United States of America. We are about to welcome Craig B. Hewlett. He was both a speechwriter and special assistant for special projects to Congressman Jack Metcalf. And I said this earlier, but he's been a consultant of federal law enforcement and is generally a very well-connected man. The recent developments in the Middle East, the war on terror, bin Laden's role in 9/11, and what he sees for the future of the United States. So strap in. This is going to be a good one. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome to Mr. Craig B. Hewlett to Coast AM. And we did not have a chance to speak before the show, and there's so much going on out there. I can't promise that this will be very linear because I and several million of our closest friends have a lot of questions for you tonight. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You know, I've heard this. I hate to think that I'm in this business and yet becoming a little jaded already, but this bin Laden thing is about to drive me crazy. It seems like there is information and lots of disinformation out there. Would you like to give us your take on exactly what happened with that whole situation? Who is he really? Many people think he was a CIA creation. Some people say he was a CIA asset who has outlived his usefulness. So could you bring a little clarity to this controversy?
Well, there's no question he was connected with our CIA. We started funding the Mujahideen before the Soviets even invaded Afghanistan. And recently, Zbigniew Brzezinski, in an interview with a French newspaper, not only admitted to that, he said there was really nothing wrong with it because the whole goal was to sucker the Soviets into invading Afghanistan and get them in a quagmire, a Vietnam of their own. So he openly admitted that we do such things. We do it in secret. We lie to the American people. And in the long run, these kinds of things may not be in the nation's best interest. But as far as bin Laden is concerned, there's no question. We backed him. We helped train him. He was one of ours. As long as he was killing Soviet troops and a secular group that was backed by the Soviets at the time, he was our guy. But, you know, it's no different than with Noriega. It's no different with the Shah of Iran. When they become a problem for us, not national security, but a problem for our corporate structure, whereby raw materials are involved, the dictator of a particular government is no longer an ally to us. We feel that he's becoming more of a problem for our corporate interests in those countries. We are compelled to switch sides and, at this point, now just outright assassinate them and pull out what is now being referred to openly as a kill order. And that's something new in our language, even in the military and law enforcement. It's not something our president or this country would have ever conceded that was part of our rule of law. And I think it's going to come back and haunt us. And by the way, let's not just talk about bin Laden and his wife that was wounded and his son that was killed. But it's now very clear, and the White House has had to admit it, that there was no firefight. Bin Laden didn't open fire. Only one or two rounds were fired, and was a courier from a different building that happened to notice that our troops were taking over the compound. But there was no firefight. He wasn't armed when we shot and killed him. His wife that assaulted one of our SEAL teams, she wasn't armed. They shot her. They shot another woman and killed her. And nobody was armed. This was a kill order. We went in, killed bin Laden. Fundamentally different, I suppose, than killing Muammar Gaddafi's youngest son and three of his grandchildren. We did it with, you know, missiles and bombs. And we just tried to kill a former American cleric in Yemen that's irritating us because of his ties to terrorist groups. So we tried to kill him with a drone. This would be the second or third time there. So if you're starting to feel jaded, you know, I don't know how long you've been doing, you know, your interviews as a host, but I've been doing interviews as a guest for approximately 32 years, something in the neighborhood of 10,000 hours. And I always prided myself that I would never become a cynic. I felt to be a cynic, you have to volunteer for it. You have to do it of your own free will.
Sure.
But I got to tell you, it's really hard not to turn into a cynic with what's going on this week.
Is there any point in my asking, was this neutralization of bin Laden even legal? Or is there
not
such
by
a thing anymore?
Law. Well, not even by our law. No, it's, you know, the rule of law requires that if somebody is considered, you know, a suspect in a crime, even if it's a crime of humanity, you arrest them, you bring them to trial, and you let the court system do that. We could have brought bin Laden to trial here on our own soil. I mean, we've turned laws on its head since Guantanamo Bay and George Bush Jr., and this country has faced a wealth of lies coming out of the White House. But I have to tell you, this is the sloppiest version of not telling the American people the truth about what's going on. This has been the sloppiest week in American history. The White House just doesn't seem to have the ability to either silence the people that they put out on the street, or they don't really know what the end result in public opinion is they want. They actually seem totally confused. Because it started out like this was a major firefight, and, you know, our guys barely got in and out alive. And it turns out absolutely none of this was true. They just went in like slick, killed him, grabbed the computers, went through the place for intelligence, and then booked, and nobody else got hurt except bin Laden and basically civilians, like his wife, his daughter, and it's just... But for this to have happened in just the last week the way it did, I don't think George W. Bush would have allowed it to get this out of hand.
Well, I don't either. It seems really strange altogether. So who takes over for him? And, I mean, he didn't look, according to the, I mean, if the photographs are even real, it didn't look to me like he was living exactly large over there. So
the idea that it was $1 million house, it wasn't worth $200,000 even in our inflated prices in El Monte, California, for heaven's sake.
Well, you know, and the other part is that I heard a rumor there were 75,000 military personnel that were in the area, but nobody noticed these Blackhawks coming in and dropping some people off. Nobody knew he was there. How could he have remained there for that long without help from the Pakistanis?
Okay, that's one of the best lies that have come out of the White House. And, you know, they should really have packaged this whole thing better, because the new issue of Foreign Affairs just came out. It's the elite journal of international relations and now counterterrorism. I've been a subscriber since 1982. I've got every copy. It's the go-to journal. It's where Kissinger and Brzezinski, Samuel P. Huntington write. Well, the new issue that just came out, one of the lead articles in it, was complaining that the Pakistani military and ISI, its intelligence arm, was completely out of control. It was in bed with bin Laden, the Taliban, that they can't be trusted. We give them money, and they use it for whatever they want. And then they say, well, you know, if bin Laden did this or Al-Qaeda did that, you know, it's because, you know, they slipped past us. Well, the complaint for years now, and confirmed by WikiLeaks, just released a group of documents that proved without question that the Pakistani ISI and the military knew precisely where bin Laden was. It was generally known throughout the region, but even in other countries in the region, like Uzbekistan, they knew, and they told our government that that's where he was. For some reason, bin Laden was not of interest to our government to take out. I think they allowed him to stay where he was. He wasn't causing anybody any problems. There was no threat to American interests. I think we allowed him to stay there for 5 or 6 years, knowing perfectly well where he was. And we waited until an opportunity came up where maybe we should exploit the fact of bin Laden and get rid of him today for whatever other reasons we achieve by doing that.
There are
a lot of other things I think they're achieving by killing bin Laden this week rather than over the past 6 or 8 years.
Really?
Yes.
Well, is this going to, I don't know, is this going to help the incumbent in some way, our president? Is this getting him some political clout of some kind? It doesn't seem to be registering on anybody's scale that it's doing that.
Well, I think initially, first of all, when an issue like this is put on the table at national security level, the discussion encompasses absolutely everything, from the economy to an election to foreign trade to what's going on in other foreign countries. Everything is put on the table. If we do this, who stands to gain? Who stands to lose? I think there's always many, many reasons. There's never just one simple explanation. To suggest that Obama gains politically by this, without question, he does. Does it hurt the Tea Party and Sarah Palin? Without question, it does that as well. But it also does other things. For years, and again, this as reported in the latest issue of Foreign Affairs, right before bin Laden was assassinated, this was in Foreign Affairs, that Muammar Gaddafi was one of our best sources against terrorism and bin Laden in particular. But at this point in history, there's a revolution brewing in Libya, just like there is in Tunisia, Egypt, Yemen, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Syria. But of interest is Libya. We're not interested in the other countries because they don't have oil. They don't have any natural resources or political clout that we're interested in our U.S. corporate interest. But in Libya, yes, it's time to get rid of Muammar Gaddafi, who, by the way, was saying that bin Laden was behind the protest against his regime that's currently going on. He was saying bin Laden was behind it. But we, of course, had already decided to remove Gaddafi. Now, we can't remove Gaddafi and claim that Gaddafi and bin Laden are, in fact, enemies if they're both still alive. We can't play this game. We've got to do something that makes it justifiable to remove Gaddafi from power. And along with removing Gaddafi, that meant it was time for bin Laden to go.
Does it seem to you like there's some sort of a concert? First of all, I don't know if I don't know which would be less discreet, the questions or the answers, you know what I mean? But it's a little bit of a stretch for me to think that Facebook and Twitter had a measurable effect in generating these various revolutions in all of these different countries at the same time. It looks to me like it's a lot more advanced and a lot more coordinated than all that, because they just seem to be going like dominoes one after another. Every day it's a different country that's trying to set itself on fire.
Well, that's a good point, actually. I don't think you're being indiscreet at all. I think we're being told a simple truth that satisfies a population, the American population, that really isn't very interested in geopolitical affairs. So if you give them something that's easy to grasp, easy to understand, something they do themselves, like Facebook, I think then you can get past having to really make the American people understand what it is our foreign policy is about. But again, I'll bring up Foreign Affairs. The journal just came out. This is the most recent issue. It's May, June 2011. It's at the newsstands. Go pick one up. The lead article is the New Arab Revolt, and in every piece in here, you get a sense that there's no question that whatever is stimulating these revolts, and it is communication between Arab groups in one country and then seeing something happen in that country, that they're empowered to act again. But to think that our Central Intelligence Agency and our human intelligence collection ability has been diminished since the global war on terror and George W. Bush's actions, you would have to be utterly naive. This is the thing that is changing the very fundamental nature of geopolitical affairs, international relations, and right here at home, what's going on about our civil liberties, the Patriot Act, and, of course, the economy. All of these things are, nothing's not connected. Nothing happens in government by accident. FDR said that, not myself. But my limited experience is that it's true. They have too good of a handle on the situations that interest them throughout the world. In Libya, Tunisia, Egypt, when all of these things started erupting, the American people didn't feel any need to say, well, why is it we don't care what's going on in Tunisia? We let Mubarak go down, and Israel didn't even want to see that happen. He was a friend to Israel. Mubarak in Egypt goes down. Syria, Assad, the son of Assad, is slaughtering his people, but we're not saying it's humanitarianly necessary to stop the genocide in Syria. No, we choose Libya, who openly, it's admitted, has been a friend to us over, quote, bin Laden in particular. But Libya is oil rich. Tunisia has nothing. Syria, we don't care about. If it tears itself apart, we stand to gain over there in Iraq and Afghanistan because it further isolates Iran. All of these things are connected, and if you pay attention and you're involved in it, at least at the level I've been for 35 years, these things make perfect sense. They may be heinous. It may be terrible that your country is in the hands of such ruthless and in many ways ignorant men at the leadership level, that they're being told this is what must be done and they go along with it. You know, I don't blame Obama or even George W. Bush. I don't think either one of them are in absolute control of anything. The machinery is moving now, and the goals are far further reaching than either one of these two individuals had any comprehension of.
So are there some, you know, this is fanciful, and everyone would, at least it would be a satisfactory answer if it were in the affirmative, that there is a group of genius, evil masterminds somewhere that do in fact have a master plan, but it's just the execution of their protocols a little ham-handed. I mean, do these people exist? I suppose they do.
You know, it's the easiest way to try to understand what goes on in the world, and America has done this for 200 years. You know, the easiest way to understand something that you don't understand is to believe that someone's doing it in secret, and that if only it were revealed to you and others, then they, A, couldn't do it, and B, it couldn't harm us. But that just has never been the way the world works. Government operates in secret. Our founding fathers warned us that those are the things you concern yourself with under the name of being vigilant. There will always be men with money and power, always, to try to get a hold of the reins of that power in government. Today, it's more likely to be a monopoly corporation like General Electric and Salomon Brothers. It's going to be a Bechtel and a BP, a Goldman Sachs, rather than a lord or a former monarch living in your country. These are the new moneyed class. They don't differ fundamentally in their thinking than the royalty of the old days, the Middle Ages even. You know, that human nature just hasn't changed all that much. We just witnessed it. We just had a president of the United States, the freest free republic ever founded since Greece, and here we are sending off the Spartans to assassinate a leader of an organization who, in general, has no relationship with any other nation state, not with Afghanistan or Iraq. Bin Laden and his group had no relationship with any nation state. So to declare war on an individual, it looks a lot like what George Bush Jr. said on the 22nd of September, 2001, in his first terrorism speech.
Yes.
He said, Al-Qaeda is like the mafia. And if that really is his perspective, then it's a fundamental diversion from the way this country operates.
It certainly is. Well, I would like to have you explain to us when we come back, after over 30 years in this business, why you continue to do it, and maybe even Have you sorted out what the end game is and maybe how long it will take for it to show itself? And then, of course, where do we as citizens fit into all that other than as some kind of fodder? Craig B. Hewlett is with us tonight on Coast to Coast AM, and we will return. Thanks, Ross. Tonight we're pleased to have as our guest for the remainder of the program, Craig B. Hewlett. He's a big-time analyst. He's been doing this for over three decades. And what I would really like to know, and I'm sure many of you would like to know, would be some details about whether bin Laden really was behind 9/11 or if he was just the one with the target painted on him, a distraction, as it were. A little bit on the civil liberties and the ramifications regarding their loss as the war on terror continues. And there's a building that seems to have come down all by itself. Oh, well, couldn't have come down all by itself. Those things just don't happen, do they? Please stand by. We'll be back. This is Coast to Coast AM. John B. in with you tonight on Coast to Coast AM with our guest, Craig B. Hewlett. Pardon me, sir. Well, there's bin Laden with the AK. There's bin Laden at the training camp. There are the aircraft crashing in the Twin Towers. Oh, bin Laden's the guy that orchestrated it. Is your opinion it was really he who orchestrated the whole thing? Or was he just the one that we were supposed to look at as the source of the problem?
Well, when I answer this question, and don't let me stray too far, if you will. You might have to bring me back on point. Let me preface it by putting it this way. In every movie you've ever seen about soldiers in combat, privates, infantry, whether it's Vietnam, World War II, even right now, if you see a movie like Restrepo or a documentary like Restrepo about what's going on in Afghanistan, the one thing you see the grunts do in the field is if they flip a building, flip a apartment building, or go into a village, whatever they do, the first thing on their mind, and this is what they're told even as privates in the field, you're there to look for diagrams, data, a map, a diary, anything you can get your hand. It's called intelligence, and it's right. Human intelligence. You're collecting as humans, and the most important form of that human intelligence is a human being. You capture somebody, you take them into custody, that's where you get further intelligence from. Every private knows this. The military has operated this way for 1,000 years. Now, in the last years, this last decade, we've seen a complete shift in the way our military functions, and it's because of how they're being directed by the civilian authorities in charge of that military. Now, I'm in favor of the civilian leadership being in control of the military. Obviously, the founding fathers had that right. But it also requires that the civilians at the head of it, the people that are from the president on down that are directing the military, they have to be good, decent, honest men to begin with, or something could happen within our military, which is what I see happening right now. We don't want Muammar Gaddafi alive. We want him dead. And if we have to kill his sons and grandchildren to do so, we'll just keep killing until he's dead. We did the same thing to Saddam Hussein's two sons, two of the most important intelligence assets we could have gotten our hands on in our so-called war in Iraq. They were running out of ammunition. They didn't have anything but AKs and a few grenades, F that. They were running out of ammunition. All we had to do, and we had it surrounded, the building, is wait. They would have run out of ammo. We just would have walked in and arrested them unless they wanted to commit suicide. But we didn't. We hit them with a Stinger missile. Blew them up and killed both of them. Why would you throw away these kinds of assets? We have been touting bin Laden since 9/11 as the terrorist mastermind. Look at the language we've heard from George Bush all the way to Obama. This terrorist mastermind that masterminded 9/11 because he hates our country, he hates our democracy, and the very institutions that George W. was standing in, the Congress of the United States. Now, if all of those things were true, and of course, I'm going to argue none of those things were true, but let's say they were true, then wouldn't it have been the smartest thing in the world for Obama to send in an 80-man SEAL team, unbeknownst to the Pakistan military and government, because they would have warned bin Laden? That's why they didn't know we were doing it. Why wouldn't we go in and seize him? He doesn't put up any resistance. He doesn't fire a weapon. He doesn't resist a young group of Navy SEALs, 20 to 30 years old, big, strong men in Kevlar, powerful men, the best warriors on earth. And this little old guy in his pajamas resists these guys.
Right.
And they have to shoot him twice after shooting his wife in the leg. And nobody's armed in the room, and nobody's firing weapons or resisting with a firefight.
You know,
why would we destroy the most important intelligence asset literally the world has ever heard of, according to our own government? The world has never heard of such a thing as him.
I would think the reason that we did that was we wanted to, in the parlance of the mob, whack him before he sings.
Precisely. And the same applies all the way back to Noriega, who's sitting in a dungeon in Miami, has never been allowed to speak publicly. These are all men who have been tied inextricably to our Central Intelligence Agency and military operations in their countries and in foreign countries, and they are privy to those things that they learn under that tutelage. Now, once they become the enemy of America, for whatever reason, the one thing America has lost sight of now, because of our involvement on every continent, in every nation, mostly about raw materials, and in this case, oil, pipelines, and more oil. These men cannot be allowed to be brought home alive because they will demand to be heard. And what they have to say in a courtroom is precisely what our government cannot allow the American people to hear that is actually going on in our national interest. What our government is doing in our name can never be known. It's gone so far in the last 30 years, it just simply can never be known. Not in this generation's lifetime. 25 years from now, nobody will care. Now I'll get to that point. In my opinion, Osama bin Laden had nothing to do with 9/11. When Bob Graham's 9/11 commission was formed to investigate it, they uncovered that there was nation states involved in 9/11, and they had the evidence. The FBI was sent in. The evidence was seized, all of it, and was classified top secret for 25 years. These are not my words. These are the words of Bob Graham, the senator in charge of the investigation. He never went public and said which nation states, because obviously he knew the direction he was going in his investigation was not going to happen. So he didn't buck the system any further. He simply said, we know there was nation-state involvement, but the FBI's got the data.
Unbelievable.
The only question for me is, which nation-state was he alluding to? That isn't hard to figure.
No, I guess it isn't.
So my money, in about 15 years, 14, 15 years, the National Archives Institute will have some documents that will reveal, you know, that many years from now, 15 years from now. I doubt I'll be alive, but somebody, you know, maybe listening is young enough and makes a note on a calendar. In 15 or 20 years, it'll be revealed that Saudi Arabia was behind 9/11. And it's not a coincidence that the hijackers were all Saudis. And it's not a coincidence that our government wouldn't know, because we are so inextricably tied to Saudi Arabia because of the oil interests, that they could have easily done this, and our own CIA not even have a clue. But I also believe that Mossad knew, because there's no other explanation why the 11 Israeli intel operatives that were then picked up and thrown out of the country were dancing a little jig in Times Square when 9/11 happened.
Clearly, you and I would have handled things. Of course, you don't know my background. I'm sure not going to discuss it on the over the air now. But there are a couple. I'm all over the place with this, Mr. Hewlett. I don't mind telling you, because I'm wondering now, how dangerous is it for you to discuss this? I mean, if I had been in this sort of the business that you're in for three decades, I'd be four deep with security. I mean, do they just not care? Is the game so far afoot that they just really don't care what we think, because the ship is going to continue sailing in the same direction no matter what we say or how many people we say it to?
We're so well divided now that I don't think the American people, by and large, in general, and I have to try to be careful how I say this, because I don't want to really be insulting towards my own people, the people of the United States, whether they're black, white, Hispanic, Asian. I don't care about those things. They're my countrymen, but I can't ignore, and for the last 30 years, I can't ignore that it's gotten worse, that politically we may be the most now ill-educated and ignorant population in the so-called free world, and that's in large measure out of an act of will. They really aren't interested. In fact, I'm going to guess a number of people turned this show off when they heard that it was going to be me discussing things like the Middle East and not aliens. For a fact that when I do commercial radio, I've been told to just get off the air, period, by callers. So most recently I was told, because of my views on Egypt and Mubarak, that why didn't I move to Egypt? You know, I understand the frustration of the American people when they're faced with a different version of events than they tend to believe to be true. But that's the problem. The American people now believe they know. They don't know what they believe, but they believe they know. And most of them are either Republicans or Democrats. If you're not one or the other, then you're not on the party line.
Right, you're just a part of the fringe at that point.
Exactly. At least that's the way the Republicans and Democrats will view you, is you're fringe. It would never occur to a diehard Republican or a diehard Democrat to think, well, this guy doesn't agree with either one of the parties, so maybe he's more intelligent than we are.
Well, I did a little background, just a little background search on you and your activities, just over the net. It's just general access stuff, and I couldn't help but at least seem to pick up a thread that the left kind of picks on you a little bit, and I would think they would be championing you, because historically the left has been anti-establishment. The government is evil. We've got to bring it down. We got to change things. We got to be more progressive. And you've mentioned Foreign Affairs magazine. That's put out by the Council on Foreign Relations. And from time immemorial, it's been like, Trilateral Commission, CFR. It's all evil. It's all bad. And yet, the left seems to pick on you a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
They've actually voted at a number of so-called left-wing radio stations. The people operating the station, the hosts, the producers, have actually voted, actually had a Democratic vote to have me banned from that station. So I know I'm not well-liked on the far left, nor am I liked on the far right. But, you know, those things come with the territory. These are citizens. They have a right to their views, and I have a right to mine. And that's the end of it. I think at some point, no matter where you start, if you're sincere about your research and analysis, if you really do try to read everything and understand with an open mind what really is going on, there's no question, no matter where you start on the spectrum, you're going to end up in the same place. This, what's going on right now, is neither left nor right. This isn't about communism and fascism. This isn't the old world. This is truly the 21st century, and something very different is taking place that's never taken place in world history. nothing like what Americans are facing is, in fact, taking place. Now, I didn't come to that easily. Like I said, I've been doing this for 35 years, and I've been self-employed my entire adult life. I've always owned a company, and I always will. I will earn my own way. But at the same time, I can't pass on my livelihood to my son or my grandchildren because of the direction my country is headed. There will be no place for free enterprise, entrepreneurialism. There will be no place for someone who believes in the tenets of Thomas Paine and the Founding Fathers as they actually are, not the interpretation of them on some of the people on the far right and the far left have done. But I'm doing this because I have children and grandchildren, and a lot of my colleagues and friends have children and grandchildren. And I think it's your duty. God, I hate that word. I'm probably more anti-establishment than you can ever imagine. I don't like anybody telling me what to do. That's why
I
could function in the military as long as I was in a combat zone. Bring me home stateside. I had a terrible time. But nevertheless, this is the last country on earth that the lamp of liberty has been lit, and it's out. It's not going out. It's out. It's why the whole world has looked to America for 100 years or more, that this is the example. This is what our government should be like. This is what we ought to be shooting for. You know, there's no pristine democracy or free republic, and there never will be. There never has, and there never will be. But if you look at the turn of the century, what we were at the turn of the century, what we were capable of during World War II, we truly were a great generation that lived at that time. What a remarkable nation we were at that time. But at the end of World War II, we had already given over the controls of government to fight World War II to the corporate interests. Now, if FDR had lived, if he had lived through the end of the war and on for another few years as Truman replaced him, I know he would have started removing the corporate interests from our government. He knew the risk. He knew them well. He was Wall Street. He would have removed the corporate interests, and Truman didn't. And we've been saddled with that corporate interest through Eisenhower, and to date, now it's shamefully obvious that the corporate interest, the monopoly corporate interest, not you and I doing a corporation together to build a widget. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about monopoly corporations like Goldman Sachs in banking and GE in weapons development and every other area of technology. That corporate interest now runs this country.
Well, you know, Eisenhower warned us about the military-industrial complex, but I guess it's not just the military-industrial complex. It's the corporate financial complex, which seems to be every bit as dangerous, and maybe even more.
30% of these monopoly corporations have ownership. 30% of their ownership is in the banking industry. Banks, monopoly banks, are inextricably tied to our monopoly corporate system at this point. And there's no way of getting out of it.
And so when things go awry, like they have in the financial industry, financial sector, what is the inevitable result? What, worldwide war again? I mean, is that how we keep the money flowing, is with these?
It's no coincidence that we're at war in the Middle East, in two countries. We haven't won anything in Iraq. We'll never win in Afghanistan. Iraq will never be stable. Now we're talking about Libya. And it's not a coincidence that the unemployment rate, the real unemployment rate, is closer to 20%, but it already broke all records this last month. So, you know, there's no coincidence here. Gasoline prices will be $5 or $6 a gallon this summer.
Well, they're already $6 a gallon in Hawaii. They're already at six in Hawaii.
None of this is a coincidence. And if you try to isolate them to argue the issues as an economist, you argue about the economy or if you're a monetarist, you argue about interest rates and the monetization of the debt. But I'm saying all of these things are connected. All of
them. Very good. Well, let's get into that some more. I'll tell you what, we're speaking with Craig B. Hewlett, and he knows what he's talking about. Please stay with us. We've got a couple more hours, and some of your calls are coming as well. This is Coast to Coast AM.